Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow.
You ever drive a Dino Ferrari in the snow in Central Park at top speed? I didn't. I did it with a Morgan once, a plus four, but not a Ferrari. It was like a rented Morgan plus four, British Racing Green, must have been late 60s, speeding through Central Park. Oh my God, that was beautiful. Better than a carriage in the snow. You know, of all the stories that I see on the news sites, you know which one is really getting my goat? A group of radical Muslims, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, filing a lawsuit against the Abercrombie and Fitch store chain. Because a manager fired a Muslim woman who refused to remove her headscarf. And they have the nerve to march outside Abercrombie and Fitch headquarters with a headline, women covered from head to toe looking like medieval throwback, saying, the hijab is freedom. So I think we should have a frank and open discussion on the Savage Nation, since we're being assaulted by medieval rules in a modern society. We have an attack here on our freedoms of women, by a medieval concept of wrapping women up because they are threats to males' frail egos. So I will ask you, the audience, is the hijab freedom or enslavement of women? You know, there used to be a phrase, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. But with the glut of scum-sucking vermin lawyers from NYU, Columbia, Harvard, and the other lower echelons of the law business, everyone is being sued in order to bring us back to the 15th century. And so again I say, is the hijab or the Islamic covering freedom or the enslavement of women? What's interesting to me, by the way, is that modern Muslim women do not want to be wrapped up like mummies. The majority in somewhere in the Sudan who have no option, or converts to Islam in the United States of America, who, as you well know, the converts usually go whole hog into the most obscure areas of a religion that they find themselves in, whether it be Buddhism, Judaism, or in this case, Islam. Most Muslim women do not want to be wrapped up like mummies, in my estimation. And so the headline is, they're screaming the hijab is freedom. See, in the animal farm, everything is reversed. In animal farm, everything is reversed. If you tell a lie often enough, it will become the truth. So you wrap a woman up like a mummy in order to suppress her sexuality, in order to make sure that other men don't even look at her, in order to deny her beauty being shown, let's say, to the world. And then you say that's freedom. You brainwash the women into thinking that that's freedom. Now, if that's what you believe, then you should stay in Syria or the Sudan or Chad, but certainly don't expect the American people to buy into that lie. Is how I look at it. And that's why I say, is the hijab freedom or the enslavement of women? Let's have a frank discussion. As you well know, the Council on American-Islamic Relations is a front group for very dangerous organizations, according to many, many investigators. And now they're using our laws in a Trojan horse manner, religious freedom, to sue everyone in sight. The complaint came 5 months after the EEOC, another front group for the most despicable elements of the legal profession, sued the clothing retailer over a similar complaint. What you don't know is that EEOC forced the Abercrombie chain to pay $50 million in 2004. They also agreed to the following. You ready for this? Now remember, CARE is one of the nation's largest Muslim pressure groups in the United States. So they fired another suit because they saw $50 million hanging there. And so here's what they did last. In the past, when they were sued, the EEOC, another disgusting, useless, evil, aggressive organization. The EEOC should be closed down by the Republicans, by the way. The EEOC should be written off and taken off the charts. It's a horrible organization. It makes any business person, it almost makes your life impossible. Listen to what the EEOC did to the Abercrombie chain back in 04. In the 04 case, the EEOC alleged that Abercrombie's hiring, recruiting, and marketing practices systematically excluded minorities and women. And as part of the consent decree that these criminals and the EEOC got out of them, the retailer agreed not to discriminate against job applicants based on race, color, and national origin, blah, blah, blah. But listen, the store agreed to hire a monitor to ensure compliance with this decree and to hire 25 diversity recruiters and a vice president for diversity. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I once worked for a local radio station that made the mistake of hiring diversity trainers for the radio station staff. I was the only one amongst everyone to stand up and tell them what I thought of them. I felt as though I were in a Nazi re-education camp. I never saw such a sham in my entire life. But what's worse is I found out that these low-life, unlicensed vermin called diversity trainers who were forced down our throats to tell us that Christianity was no good, that every other religion on the planet was good, that people of color were superior to white people. I had to sit and listen to this crap, and I didn't. I stood up and said, go to hell, all of you, and I walked out. You ask people over there. I wouldn't take it. They never hired diversity trainers in that station again. But here's the horror. Those diversity trainers go to Annapolis, the Naval Academy, the Air Force Academy, the Army Academies. They lecture our military on diversity. These low-life, thieves, anti-American vermin have the nerve to lecture admirals who are protecting us about the wonders and beauties of diversity in this manner. Now I'm asking you, is the hijab freedom or the enslavement of women? I'm opening it up to your discussion. You know my opinion. You know that I think that CARE is a criminal organization that should be put out of business. I believe CARE should be arrested, every one of them, and their assets seized. I'm not alone in that. They sued me, I sued them. You know that. That's on the table. But there are others who are on to them. But they're suing Abercrombie. Now, I want to tell you something. I don't own any Abercrombie stock. I don't even shop in Abercrombie. It's not my demographic. It's interesting to me that you have an officious, onerous government bureaucracy called the EEOC that stands in the way of every small and large business in the United States of America. It is set up as a stumbling block for businessmen. It's run by the lowest of the low of bureaucrats. People who couldn't even run a lemonade stand when they were children are now sitting there with these powers to sue a company for $50 million, largely at young males, by the way. Now, if the business has a demographic in its audience or its buyers that's largely 20-something young, why do you want to work there? The answer is because your bosses in these law firms told you to, so you could bring a lawsuit with their cronies in the EEOC to rape them for another $50 million. I'm asking you again, is the burqa or the hijab freedom or the enslavement of women? I'm open for business. You could say what you think if you're a Muslim and you love being wrapped up like a 15th century mummy on the savage nation.
Hi, Michael. It's enslavement to women, and I'm a staunch conservative, but it is definitely enslavement. I agree with everything you said. Why are you even working at Abercrombie and Fitch if you want to wear this hijab?
Because this woman took a job at Abercrombie strictly to file another lawsuit. That's how dangerous the EEOC is. That's how dangerous CARE is. Thank you for the call. Are there any Muslims out there who believe that the hijab is freedom and can explain to the American Dumbo out there why you feel free wrapped up like a 15th century mummy? Explain to everyone listening nicely and reasonably why you feel that your 15th century mummification outfit sets you free. As you well know, Orwell said that in 1984 they would be saying war is peace, freedom is slavery. Well, right now you're trying to tell us that your slavery is freedom. That's how I see it. How do you see it? Let's go to Houston, Texas. Elisa, you're on the Savage Nation. What's your opinion? Is the hijab or burqa freedom or slavery?
Well, I had a friend, and he used to say that, well, his wife used to say, Muslim friend, sorry, and his wife used to say that the hijab was freedom from sexual exploitation.
Mm-hmm. Then why don't they stay in the country that they came from where the women are not sexually exploited? Why would they come to a nation? Why would they come to a nation where women have more freedom than any nation on earth and then try to tie women up in a 15th century mummification outfit? Why? You know it has nothing to do with that. They're trying to convert this country into a Muslim nation. That's their goal in the West, because they see stupid, idiotic people in America unwilling to stand up to them, and they have all of the lawyers on their side. That's how I see it. 1-800-449-8255. Does anyone think that the hijab or the burqa is freedom, or do you see it as the enslavement of women? New York City, WOR, Tom, you're on the Savage Nation. Your opinion, please.
Oh, it's not WOR. I'm upstate New York. But, Michael, it's in slavery, and I'm wondering if we're able to go to their countries and pick and choose what rules and laws we want to abide by.
Well, as you well know, there are no crosses or Bibles allowed in Saudi Arabia. And it's Saudi Arabia behind this Wahhabi sect of Islam that is infecting the United States of America. The Wahhabi sect of Islam is the most violent, the most, let's say, retroactive form of Islam that the world has seen in well over 150 years. And that is what they're preaching in the mosques where the boys are being converted. Our government does nothing about it. Janet Incompetano is worried about returning Army veterans. She's worried about domestic terrorism, and she won't worry about the brainwashing of Muslim youth in these mosques, and they're finding out over and over again. They're the ones who are committing most of the terror in the country.
Push it, Michael.
We have a government that's useless and worthless. Everywhere you turn, it's a useless, worthless institution. The EEOC, you're telling me, is a useful organization? I say end the EEOC. End it. It's killing business in America. But you raised a very good question. Name anywhere in the Muslim world where a Christian can openly practice Christianity other than in Turkey. Turkey, actually, until recently, was quite an enlightened Muslim nation. Turkey was the first nation to grant women the right to vote. Did you know that?
No. I'm.
No, very few people know that. I know a lot about history that you may not understand, I know. But when I see the Muslim world going backwards rather than forwards, when I see the inclination, even within Turkey, a once phenomenally advanced secular state, being taken backwards hundreds of years by the Wahhabi sect of Islam, and I see the same thing going on in Virginia, in New York, in California, in Seattle, in Maine, wherever you look, it's the retrograde Muslim that is being heard. They are the people who are turning the boys into terrorists. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I woke up this morning and I read that CARE, the radical Muslim pressure group, is suing the Abercrombie and Fitch Stores, Inc., a chain, because they said, remove your hijab or headscarf. She said no. And then the women, of course, who've been brainwashed in the Muslim world, walk around with signs saying hijab is freedom, not oppression. So I thought it's time to have a frank discussion on the show of your opinion. Is the hijab freedom or oppression? Because, as you well know, this is a brainwashing campaign. It's also a shakedown by the EEOC in cahoots with the CARE group. 1-800-449-8255, San Francisco. Ed, welcome to the Savage Nation from the Great 860. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I worked with a bunch of Muslims and Arabs selling cars for years, and I had them explain to me that the covering of the hair is to show modesty towards God for women. This whole costume veil thing is where in this land is nothing but a political statement.
Well, let me ask you something. What if a nun, an Irish nun, went to get a job at Abercrombie and Fitch and insisted that she be allowed to wear her full black habit while working behind a counter? Do you think that that would fly?
Of course not. No, of course not.
She knows well enough that she doesn't belong working in a men's kind of retail clothing store, and she would not apply for the job. And generally, Christians don't make up lawsuits. Religious Christians don't make up lawsuits. But as you well know, this is a ploy by CARE and by these women in order to sue Abercrombie and Fitch in cahoots with the useless vermin in the EEOC. That's my opinion. It's the same thing as saying, I got to repeat it, would a nun even think of such, taking such a job? Of course she would not. Now, why is there a so-called religious Muslim woman doing this? Strictly for the lawsuit, in my estimation. Thank you for the call. Houston, Texas, Sarah, your opinion. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Michael, please don't stop opening people's eyes and ears. It's exactly what you said. They are trying to convert the country. I came from Egypt 40 years ago. Not one lady, Muslim lady, covered up. Now they all are covered up to distinguish between the religions.
That's right. That's exactly right. Egypt was a rather advanced secular society, particularly in Cairo, in the more advanced neighborhoods. And it's being turned backwards hundreds of years by these Wahhabi sect Muslims who have infected the entire Muslim world.
Exactly. And it's
the Muslim women who have to stand up to these bearded throwbacks. These little throwback men are afraid of women. They're afraid of women's sexuality. And this is an attempt to destroy their own women. And if you can make a little money on the side, what can be better? I was with your friends at CARE. What can be better than that? Mike in Ann Arbor, your opinion. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, you're in this absolutely on the head. You know, living here in this cesspool of liberal insanity, you know, in Ann Arbor, I try to bring up this issue to people all the time. And, you know, the liberal wackos here, they look at me like I'm crazy when I say that, you know,
well, wait a minute. Where are the liberated Arbor who will do it in the road? The women who all fought for liberation, how come they have nothing to say about the oppression of women in these mummification costumes? How come they're silent on it? That's because it was never about women's liberation. It was about knocking over the male, not so much about liberating the woman. As you well know, it was about destroying the father. It was about destroying the patriarchy. It had almost nothing to do with the liberation of women. I've gone into this all week.
Savage.
Students screaming in. There's another story on Michael Savage. Muslim radicals who disrupted a speech by the Israeli ambassador at UC Irvine, and I mean didn't just yell out, they wouldn't let him speak, are now being defended by the very same CAIR and the Lawyers Guild, who I warned you about. The Lawyers Guild has a long tie to the Communist Party USA. And they are now in cahoots. I told you for years, the radical left and the radical Muslims are natural blood brothers. They have something in common. They all want to bring down America. They want to destroy the country. That's how I see it. It's one man's opinion. If you don't like it, then prove me wrong. Engage in the discussion. I propose that the hijab and the burqa is not freedom, but the enslavement of women. And I'm asking you what you think. My proof is that, as this Muslim called, a Muslim woman who just called from Houston, that as near as 40 years ago in Cairo, nobody wore the burqa. It was just seen as what it is, chattel, the mark of chattel, property, slavery. And all of a sudden now, women are suddenly proudly walking around like slaves, wrapped up in this medieval costume. How did this happen, and why is it happening in secular countries as well? If you think it's by accident, then you're a fool. You know nothing about how things occur. This is my opinion. What's your opinion? San Fran, Brian, welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Michael, you know what? You are correct that this is actually, you know, this is something that's political. And I didn't see these things on Muslim women until after September 11th, 2001. You know, you go through the shopping malls now, and there's not one time I go into these malls and I don't see one or two of these walking around, and I never...
Well, the reason that you see more of them now is because Bill Clinton flooded America with Middle Easterners, mostly of the throwback variety. Not the modern Muslim, not the Muslim who wants to come here and advance society, but the Muslim who wants to come here and either live off the society or take us backwards 200 years. That's part of their diversity training. They don't want the country to be too advanced, you get it?
Right, and they come into our place, our country, and say, you know what, you bow down to me. You accept me. I don't have to accept you.
Look,
and
I really see the eyes behind those slits. I see hate and murder in most of their eyes. Shall I level with you?
Not nice. They're not cordial. Defiant.
No, whatever happened to when in Rome, do as the Romans do? I guess it didn't make it to Saudi Arabia. What do you think? New York City, WOR. Amy has a different opinion. You're up in the Savage Nation. Spell it out, Amy. What do you think?
Hi, Michael. I wanted to thank you for taking my call. I have a lot of respect for you, although I don't always agree with you. My background is Egyptian, born and raised in Montreal, Canada. And I'd like to say that I think that the hijab is a sign of freedom if it's applied correctly, and that is to say that women choose to wear it. In nations where it's dictated upon you, such as Saudi Arabia and elsewhere, it's most definitely not freedom.
All right, let's assume that is as valid an opinion as mine, which is that it is a mark of ownership and slavery. That's my opinion. Do you think that this woman suing Abercrombie and Fitch through CAIR really wanted to work there and was really oppressed by Abercrombie and Fitch, or do you believe it was done for the money?
Well, I think it's dangerous to assume what other people's intentions are, but I think that if you...
What do you mean it's dangerous to assume? The very same group sued and won $50 million in 2004 for the very same kind of lawsuit. I mean, how smart do you have to be to put two and two together? You don't have to assume. You can just figure it out.
I understand, and I will extrapolate based on that assumption, though. What I was going to say is I think that if you are religious and you're wearing the hijab because it's your religious calling and it's truly your decision, then you wouldn't be compelled to work in a store that goes against your own religious belief.
Well, that's another question. You know, you could argue that an Orthodox Jewish woman. No, let's put it another way. If you go in the Diamond District in New York, a lot of the people who run the Diamond District are Orthodox Jews with long side curls and black outfits, correct?
Correct.
All right. Would you expect any of them to want a job in Abercrombie & Fitch?
No, and that's why I feel, although you are assuming on her behalf what her intentions are, that there is some logic there.
Well, not some logic. It's flawless logic. It's just that you are so enlightened and so given to not want to second-guess people and want to always see the positive that when the negative hits you in the face, you're still seeing some of the positive, which I suppose is a blessing in a way to live that way. I, unfortunately, am a hard-nosed cynic, and I see things, unfortunately, as they really are. That doesn't mean, by the way, that I don't understand what the yarmulke means or what the hijab means. I know what they mean. I know they mean obedience to God, and I accept that. And I believe people should be able to practice their religion, and I believe they should be able to dress any way they damn want in the United States of America. However, if you're so damn religious that you feel the necessity to wear a hijab, why are you seeking out a job in perhaps the most opposite kind of retail establishment imaginable? There's only one reason, and that's to sue them for racial discrimination so you can win another $50 million for you and your wonderful group of cronies at CARE.
I have to agree with you. I think that is a reasonable place that's a reasonable stand. And I think that although, you know, maybe I'm a leftist nut job and I really like to give people the benefit of the doubt, I think that people like you who like to push the extreme and state what you feel, it's valid because what it does is it brings these conversations to the forefront. But your question was, is hijab enslavement or is it freedom? And I think that if it is a decision that you're making, it's your own desire to practice religion, then it is freedom. But if it is a political kind of move where you're trying to take advantage of an established business, or whether it's stuffed down your throat, as in Saudi Arabia, or if you're being forced to wear those ninja outfits, which isn't religious at all, then of course it is not freedom. So I just wanted to...
You got to get your phone. You know, the ninja outfits are interesting, where the woman is wrapped up literally from head to toe with only the eyes showing out of a slit. That outfit was not common in the Muslim world until very recently. Let us say within the last several hundred years. Where did that suddenly reemerge from?
I really, and this is a very unpopular opinion, I don't believe that that is the Muslim religion. I think that is a cultural fungus that is maybe originating from Saudi Arabia, but it was almost unheard of in Egypt. And until today, I mean, now you do see it in Egypt, and I think it's a travesty, and I think it's depressing to see it in Egypt, because Egypt was always, I think, a more progressive Muslim nation. And
it was.
Say It was. The problem now is that religion has become politicized in Egypt, and I think that if you want to wear the religious cover, which is defined in the Quran as covering your bosom and in some people's minds covering your hair, fine, so be it. That's your interpretation of the religion. But if you're going to go so far as to politicize the religion and make people wear these ninja-type outfits, I think it's a detriment to women. I think it's a detriment to the religion. I think it's a detriment to culture at large. I know that's not a popular.
And you are of course opposite me on most political issues by what you stated in the previous paragraphs. You said you're a liberal and you see things totally different than me, and yet you're willing to have a rational discussion on this. You said something that's also worth continuous discussion, which is that if this religious costume is a political statement rather than a religious one, then it has no place in the workplace. And I will posit that it is, in fact, only a political statement. I will posit it is being used by CARE strictly for the lawsuit benefits. I will further state that if you're so damn religious, why do you want a job in a clothing store that caters to young 20-something men, which plays this kind of loud club music? It has a totally different atmosphere than any religious person would want. Why did she seek them out? The answer is clearly because she wanted, along with CARE, along with the EEOC, to break Abercrombie & Fitch and put another American institution on the ropes and out of business.
Wouldn't see her as a bartender because it's anti-religious for Muslims to drink alcohol. You wouldn't...
You raise a good point. Maybe CARE should take some of these sleepers and make them go in and get jobs as bartenders and serve liquor. Are religious Muslims allowed to serve liquor but not drink it?
You're not supposed to be in the presence of alcohol at all. So what they would have...
Well, wait a minute. Half of the grocery stores, pardon me, are in San Francisco are owned by Palestinian folks who don't particularly look religious, but they're full of liquor in those stores. They must be allowed to sell them.
You're really not supposed to get any sort of financial benefit from something that's anti-religious. But that is, you know, you can't just assume that because one Muslim does something that's not perfectly Islamic, that they are now the role models of what is Islamic at large. I mean, if you're going to be a perfect textbook Muslim, then you wouldn't even step foot in a bar. But if you wanted to put one,
you wouldn't even set foot in America, would you? You'd stay in Saudi Arabia or the Sudan.
I mean, I think
why would a perfectly religious Muslim want to come to this country and try to impose their ideas of dress and their cultural ideas on the country? Why?
No, I think that they shouldn't impose their ideas onto the country. But there are many beautiful things about the United States that a normal Muslim would want to, take part of. There's a great education system, for example.
That's right. Then why do you go to an educational system like UC Irvine and not let an Israeli ambassador speak? So you're taking, in other words, the third world mentality of shouting down your enemy, not letting him talk, and bringing it to the university and destroying the enlightened concepts of the university. In other words, you're dragging the whole country backwards, not pushing it forwards. That's my point. Wherever you turn, I do not see the Muslim influence in America today advancing America. I see it pulling America backwards. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Unfortunately, I think that the examples that you bring up do prove your point.
I'd like somebody to prove me wrong. Maybe somebody can enlighten me and tell me I'm wrong. Show me how Muslims coming to America today are pushing the nation forward to more enlightenment, to something better for all people, rather than something retroactive and worse for all people.
I personally am Muslim, and I think that I'm a valuable member of society. Having said that, I think that instead of...
Wait, hold on now. But do you wear the hijab to work?
No, I do not.
Why not?
I personally don't understand it, and I don't really embrace it as being a key cornerstone to the religion. And I'm not a religious expert, so I wouldn't, you know...
For example, there are people such as lapsed Catholics who deeply believe in Jesus, who pray to God, but yet don't practice every corner of the religion. Most of the Jews in America are not particularly religious. They are, you might say, reform or liberal. They believe in God. They believe in a higher power called God. They practice some of the rituals of the religion, but they certainly don't literally interpret the Old Testament as every word is stated, or they kill half the people that they knew, maybe even themselves. If you actually read the Old Testament, it's quite a violent book. Am I correct about that?
I believe that you're right. I don't think that you can actually interpret religion 100% and apply it to modern-day society without really, you know, kind of locking yourself out of the progress of the normal human development. But at the end of the day, I think that there are valuable Muslims in society, but we need to have a larger and more loud voice, I think. And I think
the question is, why would a Muslim such as Major Hassan in the military have been pushed forward when he was a radical from day one? He was signing his medical reports with Allah be praised, and he was still not thrown out of the military, and it ended up in the Fort Hood massacre as he went on a holy war against other soldiers who were unarmed. How did that happen? Other than that everybody is afraid to say a damn word against Muslims, even when they're Major Hassan signing medical reports that say Allah be praised. Now, what if a Christian doctor had signed Jesus Saves on a medical report? How long do you think he'd last in the army?
He wouldn't have lasted at all, and that's part of the problem. The beauty of the United States of America and Canada, I'm Canadian and proud to be, is that we are a modern, accepting society, but there's a problem in the States, which is a cowardice, which I think that you are exposing very well, which is to say that just because I want to be accepting of all people doesn't mean that I need to fear pointing out the vile and disgusting things that they do. And if you have someone like that in the Army, there should have been someone with the courage to say, this is disgusting, that's despicable, and I'm not standing for it. And quite frankly, I call on Americans and Canadians and Muslims and Arabs and everyone out there listening that's rational to back people up when they're being rational. I am not anti-Muslim. I am very much pro-Muslim. But we need to support those that are reasonable and that are progressing society. And we need to call out those that are doing detriment to all of us, including me and my children and the society at large. We need to have...
You're extremely literate. You must be a lawyer.
I'm actually an engineer.
Well, better yet, thank God. But you know, Amy, it's callers like you that make this kind of discussion worthwhile, to be frank with you. I think we began somewhat opposing one another to a certain extent, and we ended up with me actually standing here saying, right on, cheering you, saying, wow, does this woman have it right? But I've also said that it's only women who can save America, not only conservative women from the Republican Party, but women such as yourself who can save the Muslim communities in America from the throwback Wahhabi sect of Islam that is infecting every aspect of the Muslim world.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's your daughters who will suffer. It is your daughters who will be put in slavery in this throwback costume turned into chattel by some stupid man.
I think it's important that the pollution, which is political religion, not be allowed to, proliferate. And
well, that's right. When a religion becomes political, it should be outlawed. How's that? When a sect of a religion crosses the line and becomes a political organization, if not in, let us say, form, then in intent, then it's time to say, wait a minute now, there's a difference between freedom of religion and freedom of a political organization posing as a religion, and we're going to draw the line. Now, someone has to bring that case to the Supreme Court, and that way we can cut the cancer out of all of the religious people in this country who may want to use their religion as a political tool.
I agree with that. And we also have to be united in the idea that we want to wake up every morning making this country a better, safer place for us and our children, and we have to be able to have the courage to point out things that are not comfortable to point out. And I just
Amy, Amy, do you live in America or in Canada right now?
No, I'm in New York City, actually.
Well, I'm going to send you a free copy of Banned in Britain. As you well know, I am a victim of the Muslim throwbacks in Britain who forced the clown Gordon Brown to ban me from Britain for speaking my mind, linking me up with people who actually killed people, murdered people, tortured people. I'm the only member of the American media still banned from Britain, and I'm not protected by anybody in the American media, but I am certainly going to keep speaking out until the people understand what happened. Stay on the line. Free copy of Banned in Britain goes out to Amy right here on the Savage Nation. Be back.
Savage.
That is the American University today, since it's been infected by the radical left and radical Muslims. That occurred at the University of California to Irvine the other day as an Israeli ambassador tried to speak. A group of throwbacks did everything they could to prohibit him from speaking, and that's their idea of freedom and enlightenment in the United States of America. And that brings us to the next issue, which is how much of Islam in America today is a religion, and how much of it is a political front group? I'll leave that to you. I realize our politicians don't have the guts to stand up to this juggernaut that threatens to sweep us all backwards several hundred years. But when I saw the story today that radical Muslims inside CAIR, along with their friends in the EEOC, the U.S. government itself, are suing Abercrombie and Fitch after a manager fired a Muslim employee who refused to remove her hijab or headscarf, I say to you, the time has come for every good American to stand up and face the fact that we are being pushed around like a bunch of weakling dummies by these radicals. Now, the government is on the side not of the business Abercrombie and Fitch, but on the side of the very same despicable group that sued them in 2004 and won $50 million and forced them to hire these throwback dolts called diversity trainers. So I ask you, freedom, not oppression, which is right out of Orwell's 1984, where we were told in the future we'd see signs such as freedom is slavery, and that's what we're seeing here. You've got enslaved women walking around saying that they're free. And I don't understand how the women's movement says nothing about this. Of course I do. I do exactly know how they say nothing about it. And so we talked about that. I'm not going to talk about it another whole hour. I think I made my point. I think it's given you some food for thought. And you're going to have to come to a decision at some point in your life, which is how much are you willing to take from the radical Muslims as those in care who sue everybody they can get their hands on at every turn in order to push their radical view of Islam down our throats. Congresswoman Rep. Sue Mirick talked about Islamic extremism yesterday, and she was attacked in Congress by liberals for standing up to the Muslim radicals.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's not only about the health security of America, it's about jobs. In its life, it will create 4 million jobs, 400,000 jobs almost immediately. Jobs, again, in the healthcare industry, but in the entrepreneurial world as well.
Yeah.
Oh, little girl of mine.
Just heard the brilliant Nancy Pelosi saying that Obama's insurance scam will create 4 million jobs and create 400,000 jobs immediately. She's the Speaker of the House, the third in line to protect America, should God forbid that befall us. Here's a new story for this hour. In the last hour we talked about, is the hijab freedom or enslavement for women? I'd rather move on if we could. This story is much more important. It's fundamental to the economy of the world. As you know, Greece is in trouble. Greece is defaulting. It threatens to pull the entire euro down. And the Greeks who have to live through the belt tightening, you know, job cuts, cuts in hours, they're rioting in Greece because they're socialists. And in Athens, there was a protest of 2 million basically government workers and bums on welfare, as workers revolted against the government's austerity plan, the same thing that will happen in America when inevitably the Democrats have to finally break the bad news to the dolts in government and the dolts on the dole. And so, therefore, we're going to look at the situation in Europe for a moment because it could hit us very soon. Here's the headline, putting it up on Michael Savage. Man who broke the Bank of England, George Soros, at center of hedge funds betting against crisis hit Europe. The man who broke the Bank of England in 1992 is said to be at the center of a plot to cash in on the demise of the euro. George Soros's investment business, Soros Fund Management, is among a group of heavyweight Wall Street hedge funds which have launched a series of massive bets against the euro. Now, I'm sure you're not going to read this story in the corporate-owned newspapers of America, but this is coming to us out of England on the Mail Online, and you're hearing it live on the Savage Nation. So, in other words, this currency trader, this currency speculator, who broke the Bank of England and almost destroyed the currency of Malaysia, setting off a record of anti-Semitism around the world because of what he did to the Malaysian currency, is now about to destroy the euro, according to this article. The bets against the euro, they say, came after an all-star ideas dinner in New York, where some of the world's most powerful currency speculators argued that the euro will plunge to parity with the U.S. dollar. The single currency, the euro, has been under enormous pressure because of Greece's debt crisis, plus financial worries in Portugal, Italy, Spain, and Ireland. The euro traded $1.51 in December, but has fallen since to $1.34. We learned that traders are borrowing 20 times the size of their bet, boosting their potential gains and losses so that a euro move to parity with the U.S. dollar could represent a career trade, meaning a trade that makes them $100 million. For example, if an investor puts up $5 million to make a $100 million trade, a 5% price move in the right direction doubles their initial investment. Now, as you well know, it was margin trading of this kind that brought about the stock market crash of 1929, or maybe you don't know that. And this kind of margin trade should be outlawed, but it isn't outlawed because George Soros put Obama in office. He put Obama in office because Obama's just a puppet of him and a puppet of the other bankers who are now going to manipulate world currencies to their own benefit in the estimation of many people who have studied this in great detail. Details of the secretive dinner emerged in the Wall Street Journal just days after Soros warned in a newspaper article that the euro could fall apart even if the EU can agree a deal to shore up support for stricken Greece. Soros, who made more than $1 billion when the pound was ejected from the exchange rate mechanism in 1992, believes the structure of the single currency, meaning the euro, is patently flawed. And he goes on. Soros' fund management group did not respond to calls from the newspaper. Now, I know that this is not a kind of topic that the average listener can call about because you're not speculators. You're working for a buck. You're not a currency speculator. You don't even understand this. But listen to this. A going price for a bet against the euro right now is around 7% of the amount that a parity trade would pay off. So for an investor seeking $1 million bet, the cost is only $70,000. This means that the market currently assigns roughly 14-1 odds that parity will be reached with the dollar. In November, the odds were around 33-1, said a person has been watching the trade's pricing. Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou last night hit back at the speculators who he blames for preying on the country's troubles. Following, well, you should see what's going on in Greece right now. There's a magazine, the German magazine Focus, which shows the Venus de Milo giving the middle finger by a headline accusing Greece of swindling its way into the euro. Betrüger in der Eurofamilie. It's an amazing picture. I wish, Art, if you're listening, get that one up on the website. There's three pictures that you have to see. It's a German magazine Focus, which shows the Venus de Milo with a middle finger sticking up at the reader. And it shows the Venus de Milo giving the middle finger with a headline accusing Greece of swindling its way into the euro. Below it, though, is a picture from the Greek newspaper, the Daily Whatever, which is a depiction of the statue of the goddess Victoria atop the Siegessäule in Berlin, holding a swastika early this week in reaction to the Focus cover. So there's a tremendous cultural war going on in Europe right now that is related to the economic war going on right now, which is related to the currency war going on right now, which is related to the crooks who are gambling on currencies right now, who want to destroy families across the world simply to enrich themselves. There's nothing you can say that hasn't been said already. It was speculators who broke America in 1929. It was speculators who broke America in 2009. It is speculators who broke the Bank of England. It is speculators who broke the Malaysian currency. It is now speculators like Soros who will destroy the world in order to have more gain. Now, remember, this man is worth untold billions of dollars. He's in his late 70s, and yet he is still hungry for his next kill. What do you do with predators like him? How do you control currency predators like him? Should currency speculation be outlawed altogether? I frankly think currency speculation should be banned. That's my personal opinion. I believe currency speculation has no place in a sane global order. What do you think? Look, you can talk about it. I mean, there's things that we can say. I'd like to hear from you. Chicago, Eric, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, the difference, I think, between 1929 and now is that if inflation occurs against the euro, that's gonna cause a deflation in the U.S. dollar. A deflation in the U.S. dollar means China's going to sell off a lot of their treasury bills that they have against the dollar right now, which is inherently going to boost the dollar and boost the American
economy. Well, let's make it simple for the average listener. If the euro is driven down to parity with the U.S. dollar, it's at $1.34 now, if through currency speculation by Soros and others, the euro is driven to parity with the U.S. dollar, that makes the U.S. dollar more expensive, number one. It also makes U.S. goods more expensive in Europe, which means our trade imbalance will grow even worse.
The trade imbalance...
Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Chicago, Joe. I get a lot of callers from Chicago on these topics because Chicago is a mercantile center with a tremendous stock market, and I don't blame them for calling. I'd like to hear what they have to say about this. Chicago, Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, listen, there's nothing wrong with what George Soros is doing as far as speculating goes. These markets are free. These governments are rotten. They're corrupt. He's doing nothing wrong. I've taken orders from George Soros' desk, okay? They lose money on bets as well as make money on bets. And just because the guys tell you that they're going to do a trade doesn't mean that they're doing that trade at all. For all you know, George Soros may be betting the other way. Okay?
I agree. Now, that's interesting. Actually, that's the first thing that came to mind. When I said this little schmuck journalist says Soros is going to bet against the euro, what I said is that's a sucker's article. He's probably betting in favor of the euro. He's trying to sucker millions of people around the world to bet against the euro when he's probably gone long on the euro.
I've seen him do this in Japan when I was trading on a desk in Japan. He's a master at this, okay? You don't make billions of dollars by telling people what you're doing. Give me a break.
No, I agree with that. But let me ask you something, since you're a currency trader or you know something more about this than I do. Do you think the euro will fall or rise?
The euro will fall just because Europe is overvalued. What we think is a rotten house that we have here in the States, Europe is 10 times as bad as us. I actually worked for a German bank at one point that had some lady going around buying in movie productions that took the bank down for $500 million. Do you think that really that they have anything better than what's here in the United States?
Absolutely. No, and it's, of course, the European nations are virtually all socialist countries where there's a phenomenal amount of lazy bureaucrats on monster pensions. I see them in San Francisco on their 12-week summer vacations looking like children at a school picnic, with nothing to do in their lives but walk around taking stupid pictures. I mean, all of that does have to come to an end at some point.
Yes, the sad thing, Mike, is that most people never leave this country. Most people never live outside of this country for 2 or 3 years to get a different perspective on how...
So let us say this happens and the euro comes down to reality, to on parity with the dollar. Doesn't that kill us on the trade imbalance?
Yes, it does. It definitely hurts us, okay? But we haven't been competitive for a long time anyway. What's the difference? We're screwed no matter what.
Wait a minute. What's the difference in our American jobs? Caterpillar, 74% of Caterpillar's products are sold, sales are overseas, outside the United States. That would put a tremendous break on Caterpillar sales, for example, which would reflect on manufacturing in the U.S. and probably put a lot of people on the street again.
Well, I hate to tell you this, Mike, but you know what? Caterpillar's in Illinois, where I am. All right, Caterpillar sells most of their stuff to Asia, okay? They're not selling anything over in Europe. Europe is in decline.
All right. What happens if the dollar rises, the euro falls? What are the Chinese going to do?
The Chinese are pegged to the dollar.
So they'd be happy with that.
What's that? What are they going to do after that?
No. In other words, if the euro falls and the dollar rises, proportionate, let's say the euro falls to a dollar, rather than $1.34? Do the Chinese dump dollars, or do they suddenly hold on to their T-bills?
The Chinese are going to hold on because they're locked to the dollar. They're tied to the dollar. That's how they protected themselves from getting screwed by the U.S. We didn't want them to be tied to our dollar, but they're a little bit smarter than you give them credit for, okay?
That's right. They would not reflect that in their yuan. There was a demand for 10 years for them to revalue the yuan, and they wouldn't do it. That's how they dumped so much garbage on our shores and built up such a trade surplus with us, because they had a control over the currency. Apparently, they shoot money speculators in China. They didn't permit the Soroses in China to wreck their yuan. The government controlled the value of the yuan, not the Chinese George Soroses. So let's be honest here. They don't permit currency speculation, do they?
No, they really don't. And the thing is...
See? You know, I'm a talk show host, but people don't understand that I know an awful lot about finance. I never disclose this. But I know a lot more about finance than people may expect from a mere talk show host. But you're a currency trader, and you pretty much know that I know what I'm talking about by what we just discussed, correct?
Absolutely, you do, Mike. Okay.
But you did something in this call that really made me feel good. When I read Mail Online, man who broke the Bank of England, George Soros, at center of hedge funds betting against crisis at Euro, the first thing that came to my mind is, why would a guy who makes billions of dollars tell a newspaper that he's betting against the Euro? I certainly sense that he's betting for the euro.
I can only tell you that he is a smart man, and he takes his lumps, okay? He's not always right. I'm not defending him.
I'd like to see him wearing a barrel with suspenders around them. I think he's done so much damage on this earth, I'd like to see the man wearing a barrel with suspenders. I don't respect men like him. He's the man who gave us Barack Hussein Obama. Never forget that. God bless you. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Hey, la di ding dong, a lang a lang a lang, boom ba lo, ba do ba do ba bay.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take.
We are talking about all of the social ills the world has ever known and will ever know on the Savage Nation. A wonderful way to make a living. Constantly looking for problems. Makes it very easy to live with me, I gotta tell you. Very easy to live with a talk show host that is successful and conservative. Makes for a dream for everyone around you. They say, why are you cutting me off, or I'm not a caller. I said, all I'm doing is giving you my opinion. Everyone gets sensitive about it. You're cutting me off, I'm not a caller, let me speak. I said, I just said a word. That's what I mean, there's an example. I said, what's an example? I just gave you my opinion. No, you're cutting me off. People get sensitized to you. It's impossible. That's why the dog and I mean, we get along. What a day I had. We had a storm out here, a rainstorm. That means you're going to get hit again in the East Coast in 3 days. You think you're going to pull out of this? You're mistaken. 3 days from now, you're going to get hit with another one. We got hit with a wallop today in the West Coast. Oh, my goodness. I can't go boating again this weekend. Although Sunday's supposed to be sunny. I can't wait to go out. Horrible time of year for me. The allergies right now are so bad on the West Coast. You know why? In Northern California. Southern California, by the way, sunny, blah, blah, blah. It may as well be two different states. It's so different. So Northern California is walloped by this rain, which is good in a way, because the pollen, every vehicle, every house, every street is covered with a greenish-yellow pollen from the pines. You can't believe what it's like to live with pine pollen. Many of you have, you know, hay fever, you have a ragweed allergy. You don't know what it is to have allergies to pine trees. They're astounding. Anyway, so everything's yellow, so this washes it away for a day or two, which is beautiful, you know. Which I like. Then I get a little flood in the house just before the show. And as you know, I broadcast either from a studio or from houses. Ask the guys. 10 minutes before the show, I'm running around with like hoses from the roof and this and that. And then I have to come down and do the show, which I think I've done very well so far on the hijab. Is it enslavement or freedom? And then we talked about money changers in the temple. And now here's one entitled Jesus and the Money Changers for the religious amongst us. And the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem and found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves and the changers of money sitting. And when he made a scourge of small cords, he drove them all out of the temple and the sheep and the oxen and poured out the changers' money and overthrew the tables and said unto them that sold doves, take these things hence, make not my father's house a house of merchandise. John 2:13-16. So we know the story of Jesus throwing the money changers out of the temple. And what happened to him as a result, which is why we have George Soros, not Jesus, as the wealthiest man on earth. This is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. I'll be back momentarily.
Savage.
Eddie, my love, I love you so. I want it for you. You'll never know.
Tis the Savage Nation. Talking about money changes in the temple. Now, you know, years ago, I wrote a book called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. And what I want to redefine is, I want to redefine some terms for you, because I spent the week teaching you about the difference between liberals and communists, or liberals and radicals, or liberals and progressives. What you have to understand is that communists are not liberals. I mean, I use the phrase liberal this, liberal that, but I'm really referring to communists, because the communists have taken over the liberal ideology. Many people listening to this show say, wait a minute, why does he bash me? I'm not a bad person. I believe in many of the things he does. The fact is that liberals have a fine, upright tradition. It's symbolic of great things, which is why the communists or progressives have appropriated the term liberal for their own use. But you see, you have to understand what's happening in this country. Communism is the very opposite of liberalism. Liberalism actually means the increased rights for the citizen, which we all agree upon. I agree on that. A curb on the powers of the central government. I agree with that. Freedom of speech. I agree with that. Freedom of religion. I agree with that. Freedom of the press. I agree with that. But communism means fewer and fewer rights for the private citizen, the curtailment of freedom of speech, the curtailment of freedom of the press, and the curtailment of the worship of God. In communism, the state becomes all-powerful, which is the absolute reversal of American liberalism. And make no mistake about it, my friends, communists hate liberalism. That is the genuine liberals of America. They denounce liberals, by the way. They do everything they can to destroy real liberals in communist nations. And that is because communists realize that true liberalism is a bitter enemy, a fighter for the things that communism opposes. Now, I will tell you again the next thing you need to know, because I spent the early part of the week talking about the roots of Obama in radicalism, and he is a naked Marxist, as sure as I'm sitting here. In my estimation, he is far from being a liberal. Obama represents to me the end of the arc that was begun in the 60s, if not sooner. And the example on the extreme other side, the violent side of communist revolutionaries, was the Biedermannhof gang, which I talked about. He is certainly not a violent revolutionary. He is the silent type of revolutionary. He's gone within. In the Frankfurt School of Communism, they taught people how to convert a society from within. And he has done that. But again, communists are not progressives. You understand that? They all say that they're in the camp of progress. Communists say that they're progressives. And one of the tenets of communist propaganda is that communism is the latest word in social progress. You hear that? They claim that any other form of government, especially our mere constitutional government, is outmoded, old-fashioned, and antique. They claim communism is the wave of the future. They say that religion is the opium of the masses, and it must be destroyed. They must cast God out of the country. They must get rid of the oppression of Christianity. And they say if you join the Communist Party, you will see progress. And those who do not follow the communist teachings are reactionaries, fascists, and warmongers. Now, everybody listening to the show wants progress. If you grow soybeans, you want to grow better soy. If you grow corn, you want to grow better corn. If you even have a green lawn, you want to weed out the dandelions and have better grass. If you're a manufacturer, you want to develop a better product. That's normal. That's real progress. But the communists have stolen this idea and have convinced many of you that they are progressives, but the exact opposite is true. Communists are barbarians in modern dress, and they use propaganda today to get what they want. I'll tell you more about this over the next days and weeks on the Savage Nation, but I think what we should do now, Beowulf, is that since I've exposed how communism is not liberalism and communism is not progressivism, and how many people listen to the show say, you know, I like that guy Savage, but why does he bash me? I'm a liberal. And yet he doesn't understand that I'm actually a decent person and we agree on so many things. That is because you may be a real liberal, but your friends who call themselves progressives are real communists and you don't know it. And I've tried to tell you all week that virtually everything you see going on inside the Obama administration is the furthest thing from liberalism. The takeover of an industry, that's not liberalism, that's communism. Or at the very least, socialism. the attempt to influence talk radio, as we reported yesterday on the show, by having zombie callers call shows like this, and how to call shows about the so-called healthcare scam. That's not liberalism. That's not freedom of speech. I think what we should do right now, Beowulf, is throw some red meat to the left wing and play the piece on the Biden-Manhoff gang from earlier in the week. It's only a few minutes long, and it's worth doing. You have that ready to go? I'd like to play that one, Phil. Please put it up. Play it right now. I take you back in time to the Biden-Manhoff gang in Germany in the 70s. You don't have to actually know who Bider was or who Meinhof was to understand what I'm about to tell you. I'll just tell you in short, the Biden-Manhoff gang was a radical left-wing group of machine gunners and bombers who attacked the middle class, kidnapped, all in the name of peace, justice, and love. Now, they supported the Arab cause. They hated Jews in Israel. They claimed they hated Zionism, not Jews. But, of course, they hated Jews and Zionism, being the grandchildren or the children of Nazis. They really didn't fall far from the tree. Although they posed as leftists who were out for social justice and in favor of the Third World and the Third World Liberation Theology, by the way, which Obama was fed for 20 straight years at his church, in his colleges, etc., liberation theology, you heard all of that, Third World Liberation Theology. It's exactly what Obama was bred and schooled in. And the Obama-Biden-Manhoff connection is what I want to talk about today. So that when we talk about the health care bill, which is going to come up over and over again, you have to understand how this connects to the radicals going back to the Biden-Manhoff gang, who were influenced by the writings of Mao Zedong and the philosophers associated with what is called the Frankfurt School and Marxist philosophers such as Herbert Marcuse. Now, many of you have heard of Saul Alinsky and Bill Ayers, but you may not have heard of Herbert Marcuse. Herbert Marcuse was the founder of the Frankfurt School of Marxist theory. And one of the main ideas of the Frankfurt School was that instead of outright revolution and social disruption, the left would allow society to continue providing goods and services and to defend the nation, while they, the left-wing intellectuals, would take charge of education, manipulate the public with media propaganda, corrupt morality through the entertainment industry, and infiltrate government bureaucracy at all levels. Does it sound familiar? This is exactly what Barack Obama has succeeded in doing. He's not the first, but he certainly should be the last in this long line of Marxist revolutionaries who have been in the White House. I would say Bill Clinton was the first. We also know that Obama's childhood mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, was a member of the Communist Party. We know that Obama admits attending, quote, socialist conferences. We know that Obama admits reading Marxist literature. We know that Obama became a community organizer and came into contact with the Democratic Socialists of America, who then endorsed his campaign for Illinois State Senate. And we know that Obama became friends with William Ayers, a member of the socialist group Students for a Democratic Society, which was a violent group, by the way. And yet now Obama has infiltrated government bureaucracy to the highest level of all. The Biden-Manhoff gang used violence to try to achieve socialism, and they failed. They were defeated. But Obama was more faithful to Herbert Marcuse and his plan to infiltrate government peacefully, and he has succeeded beyond his wildest dreams. And so that is why I want to talk about Obama and the reverse Robin Hood myth and the health care proposal and the Maoists, Marxists, and other communists known as czars in the administration and what you can do about it. Right, so there was a teeny little micro lesson in political philosophy. But remember that much of what you hear that is disguised as liberalism is merely double talk. It's the double talk. It's part of a communist deceptive device known as Aesopian language. What is Aesopian language? Nearly everyone listening to this show is familiar with the fables of Aesop, Aesop's fables, such as the fox and the crow and the lion and the mouse. And often the point of the story is not directly stated, but it must be inferred by the reader. This is called a roundabout presentation. Lenin and his associates before 1917, when living in exile, made frequent use of Aesopianism. Much of their propaganda was written in a roundabout. and elusive style to pass severe czarist censorship. And so the early communists desired revolution but could not say so. And they had to resort to hints, theoretical discussions, even substituting words, which though fooled the censor were understood by the initiated, that is, individuals trained in party terminology. And so if you read the official history of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, the Bolsheviks, telling how Bolshevik agitation in St. Petersburg in 1912 was led by Pravda, the communist newspaper, explained that the periodical could not openly call for revolutionary action. That would have brought the government down upon them. So hints instead were put into the paper that were understood by the communists were used. You understand? Now, what does that have to do with today? It's the very same propaganda techniques being used today by the administration and by the newspapers in America that don't outright call for revolution or social upheaval, but they hint at it. They send out the code words, the hinted code words, such as diversity, such as equality, such as racism, such as social progress. These are all code words for a communist revolution, whether you know it or not. And don't think the people in the newspaper business don't know it. They know it very well. Don't underestimate your enemy, which is all I can tell you. In fact, the first rule of warfare is know thy enemy. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Don't accuse me of being lazy, whatever you do. Don't accuse me of not working for my buck. Don't accuse me of not creating Persian miniatures on the air. Don't accuse me of not coming to work prepared. Don't accuse me of not being able to support my arguments. Whatever you do, don't accuse me of any of those things. You can say anything else you want about me, but please don't accuse me of not being prepared to support my positions. And my main position today is that we're living in a sea of propaganda that's almost impossible to penetrate unless you're, let us say, a certain age and you've had a certain education and a certain political sophistication. You cannot understand how far the propaganda has penetrated the mind of the American. There are children in this country who believe, for example, despite all the evidence to the contrary, that global warming is man-caused and the earth is about to come to an end. They are the same children who, if you took them in kindergarten and taught them that snow was black, by the third grade they would say snow is black. And anyone who said, no, this is a color chart, here is white, the snow is the same color, therefore it is white, they would say, no, there is something wrong with you, the snow is black. I know the snow is black. I know that there is global warming. I know that the polar bears are dying. This is what's happened to America as a result of 40 straight years of socialist slash communist slash progressive education through the NEA, through the public schools, and through many, many other avenues, including, entertainment industry, whether it be the media, such as the newspapers, which are a given, that you know. But how does that tie into the entertainment industry? You've heard this 1,000 times before, but it's worth mentioning. I watch a lot of military history. I don't know why. I have a morbid sense of humor, maybe. But last night, I was watching something I hadn't seen in a year, which was World War II in HD in color. And it was about the Marines landing on Saipan and the Japanese dying almost to the last man. But the worst part of it were the civilians, the Japanese civilians, the indigenous Japanese civilians who lived on Saipan, who were jumping off a cliff, some of them slashing their own children's throats and throwing them 200 feet to the sea below, or entire families jumping from the cliffs, because they had been brainwashed by the Japanese military that the Americans would rape them, torture them, and kill them. And then you see pictures of the American men, I mean, who had been through the bloodiest fighting of the war imaginable, holding children in their arms, giving them water, the babies shaking, the babies dirty with blood, picking them up from the dead mother's arms. And you could see these boys in the midst of fighting, holding the little babies and giving them water. And I sat there, and a part of me started to get, first I wept, and then I got angry at the propaganda against the U.S., the propaganda against the military in particular made me enraged. Every time I hear someone calling a cop a pig or a soldier a fascist, I literally want to strangle them. The opposite is true. We have the most humane police on the planet with the most violent class of illegal aliens imaginable in the world that we have to tolerate. that these police have to deal with day in and day out, and they know how to exploit the police. These vermin, illegal aliens, come here, and they know how to use the law to get away with virtual murder. There was a case in San Francisco, just broken South San Francisco, where an illegal alien gardener who had worked on a property a year before went back to the house, talked to the woman. She was 56. Her husband was 74. He asked her if she needed work done. I don't know how. He got in the house with his two illegal alien buddies. They beat the 74-year-old man up. They knocked his teeth out. They raped a 56-year-old woman. They stole her jewelry. They stole her money. This was a lower middle class family, and then drove away in his car. They all come here to work. They all come here to work. And those are the people that you want to grant amnesty to. Those are the people that you think I deserve, that I'm required to give health care to. Do you know that every case the Democrats showed this last week of those who are uninsured who need insurance are illegal aliens? They're either Jesus this or Jesus that, without any reference to the fact that they're non-citizens. They keep saying there are 30 million uninsured Americans. I'm sure that's true. How many of them are illegal aliens? 10, 20, 30 million, all of them? Most of them are illegal aliens. They don't deserve health insurance. They don't deserve free health care. They don't belong in this country. And yet our politicians take their side, not our side. That's why the American people are at a revolutionary point. That is why we're at a point of literally no return in this country. When you have a group of gangsters in Congress who conduct hearings on health care reform, and not one congressman or one senator brings up either reining in the vicious tort lawyers and or stopping health care for illegal aliens, you know why the American people are at a flashpoint, why they've actually passed the flashpoint. That's because we no longer have representative government. The system we have is supposed to be a representative system. We elect a representative, and that representative represents our viewpoint in Congress. How many of you listening to this show believe that your congressperson or your senator represents your interests in Congress? Well, I know if it was an audience out there of 10,000 people, I'd probably see 200 hands go up. They'd all be, a small group of people would say, yes, we have a representative government. You know and I know there's no representative government. You know and I know that unless you put a barrel of cash in the hands of most congressmen, you're not going to get anything for it. Now, there are exceptions. There are exceptions. I had dinner with a fine congressman from Texas on Sunday night and Monday. He's one of the good ones. He's a man, Mr. Culberson, who I have to go to if I want to help Lieutenant Behenna. I asked him to help. I couldn't go to Dianne Feinstein. I couldn't go to Barbara Boxer. I couldn't go to any congressman in the state of California. I couldn't go to one congressman in Lieutenant Behenna's state. I had to go to Texas to find someone who might investigate why this hero soldier is rotting in Fort Leavenworth for 15 years and why they won't let this hero out on appeal while his case is pending. Maybe I'll get an answer. Maybe I won't. Maybe the Defense Department will not tell even a congressman. When I was banned from Britain in May of 2009, the most shocking thing that has ever happened to me in my life, not one congressman in the United States of America came to my help, my aid, except Congressman Culberson of Texas. I'm not in his district, but he knows right from wrong. So he wrote a letter to Hillary Clinton. She said basically drop dead. He wrote a letter to the British snots. They basically said drop dead. That's representative government. That's your idea of a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. When a major member of the American media, that's me, I have the third largest talk show in the United States of America. I am put on a list with murderers, criminals, and torturers because I say things that the liberal Labour Party socialites in England don't agree with, because the Muslim pressure groups in England wanted the list to be balanced. So the list of banned people didn't include all Muslims. So they put me on the list and you did nothing about it. Hillary Clinton, who's supposed to represent the American people, did nothing about it. And she's now posing as some Joan of Arc, some great hero of America. No, my friends, this is not a representative government. This is a government of the lobbyists, by the lobbyists, and for the lobbyists. God bless the Tea Parties. God bless the Tea Parties. God bless the Tea Parties. Keep shaking the system till the rats get thrown out.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation.
And as I still walk on, I think of the things we've done together.
This is on MichaelSavage.com. Yesterday we reported, and you can read it for yourself, how Obama is telling Democrats to flood talk radio with pro-Obama calls. This is government propaganda at its worst. BBC, Gaddafi urges holy war against Switzerland. From the Wash Post, Iran and Syria are mocking U.S. policy. In other words, all of the arse-kissing by Obama in the Muslim world got him nothing but disgrace. Fox News says you can call him Al, but Al won't call you back. They say in the last 3 months, as global warming has gone from a scientific near certitude to the subject of satire, Al Gore has been mum on the topic. Defense Secretary Gates has backtracked on don't ask, don't tell. I guess he heard from the actual fighters on the ground as opposed from listening to the commander-in-chief, who apparently has never commanded anything except staple guns as a community organizer. Remember yesterday we reported at the end of the day that the Democrats slipped a rider into the bill to put CIA agents in jail for 20 years? Who abuse captured terrorism suspects? Well, the Republican lawmakers stopped it. Thank God for them. A new study says that a belief in God relieves depression. All you religious people, go to MichaelSavage.com, print it, and save it. Confessed child killer is hanging out at a public park in Fort Lauderdale. He snatched a 12-year-old girl off the street, raped her, stabbed her, killed her. Now he's in Fort Lauderdale, Stranahan Park. The police can do nothing. Thanks to liberalism, the mental disorder. Rasmussen poll. Approval of Obama down to 44%. That's amazing. Just 23% of the nation's voters strongly approve of the way that Barack Obama is performing his role as president. And at Penn State, the students have coined a drinking holiday. That's right. That's what's on their minds. Obama aides are meeting with atheists at the White House. Amazing. This is a big story. A new CNN poll says that 56% of Americans say that the government is a threat to their rights. That would include an awful lot of Democrats who fear them. Don't you think so?
Yeah, that's like 10 or 12 million voters who have voted for Obama who think the same thing.
There's an incredible box on MichaelSavage.com that you simply must look at, and that is for fun. And these are stars, so-called, caught by the candid camera. You're not going to believe how the so-called Hollywood elite actually look in ways they never wanted you to see them. I cannot believe what Twiggy became. You can't believe these pictures. You must look at them. They're amazing.
Without Photoshop, they're not so hot.
It's interesting to me that many of my listeners were self-identified liberals of the 60s, and they don't really know what their identity is today. They're not really a leftist or a progressive because they know that most of them are phonies and it's all hot air rhetoric that's used to grift people out of things. But they're not willing to say they're a conservative, and I don't blame them because when you see the fake conservatives out there, I know they don't want to identify with that. So they call themselves an independent or a moderate, which is probably more close to the truth than it is. But many of my listeners who call themselves moderate or libertarians or independents are actually liberals. They're actually true liberals. What you don't understand is that the whole definition of what a liberal is has changed. So let's not worry so much about definitions. Let's worry instead or focus instead on what a hardcore Maoist, Marxist, socialist is and what he wants to do to the United States of America and what he is actually doing under the guise of helping people get health care right now. And so you have to go back to Herbert Marcuse and the Frankfurt School, okay? And so the Frankfurt School was a conspiracy to take over a country through a quiet cultural revolution, not through violence, as was done by the Biedermannhof gang and the other members of the Red Brigade. And I want to talk about this again over and over again. Give me some hard hippie music of the 60s. Okay, so you get the picture. So even the Beatles were singing songs about revolution, encouraging the youth to drop the mores of the middle class, to overthrow their parents' strictures, you know, bring about a new order, a new society. And what they don't understand is they actually have brought about a new order and a new society. And who's sitting here listening to the show could say it's a better order and a better society than the one that your parents had? I'd like to know anyone listening to the show tells me you're living in a safer world, a cleaner world, a more moral world, because it just is not true.
Savage.
It is Friday, and here's James Hurston with a report on the shenanigans going on in Hollywood.
Participant Media is an entertainment company, and it's not very well known outside of Hollywood. The group finances lots of movies, but it's in the agenda business. Participant is into both film and television. They finance, produce, and distribute what they call socially relevant movies, typically based on current events and topical subjects, but have an additional goal of changing beliefs of the audience. By the end of its second year in business, this company's films had been nominated for 11 Academy Awards, which says a lot about what turns on the typical Academy voter. The company was founded in 2004 by a guy named Jeffrey Skoll. He was eBay's first president. He took all this moolah he made at that internet auction site and went into the movie biz, like a lot of people want to do. Skoll apparently never heard that famous line that movie mogul Jack Warner said. He was asked to approve a script with an ideological slant, and he replied, quote, "If you want to give a message, send a telegram." So participant went into the movies with a message business. What kind of message? Well, let's take a look at participant's portfolio because it reveals a clear pattern. The company produced Al Gore's Oscar winner, the anti-global warming film, An Inconvenient Truth, which we now know should be reclassified as a science fiction movie. This year, the company produced another Oscar-nominated documentary titled Food, Inc. This is an expose of big food. They also produced a movie titled Countdown to Zero. This was to expose the evils of nuclear weapons, of course, our nuclear weapons, and exploring giving up our weapons.
Like we didn't see that coming.
Participant helped bring to the unsuspecting public that movie Syriana that tried to show the noble motivations of suicide bombers, and it also gave George Clooney an Oscar. And then they brought the umpteenth movie dealing with one of Hollywood's favorite subjects, the blacklist era, in the form of another Clooney movie, Good Night and Good Luck. The company is currently partnering on a film called, get this, Furry Vengeance.
What?
A family comedy that deals with deforestation. Now, the movie stars the actor Brendan Fraser, and he plays an Oregon real estate developer who meets up with animals who are willing to defend the earth from those greedy capitalist businessmen. Yeah, that's what we need. Another anti-capitalist film for the whole family. Despite winning all that Oscar gold and receiving lots of mainstream media critical acclaim, participant has not been that successful with the kind of audience that likes to go to the multiplex, shell out their money, and watch movies. their in-your-face agenda-driven stuff sometimes doesn't bring in enough bucks. So what's a self-respecting, progressive, social change-seeking outfit like Participant going to do? Well, the company decided to enter a lucrative new genre. The Participant execs sat in the boardroom and said to each other, "What America needs is another cheesy horror movie." So the company partnered with Overture Films to produce a remake from a 70s movie called The Crazies. And it was just released nationwide.
Play the clip.
"David, I'm not going to do this. I can't go to my parents."
"You have no idea.
And neither do you. Look, whatever it is, I can't just leave. Are you going to leave?"
"I'm the sheriff."
"I'm their doctor."
"Yeah, well, if it turns out what they need is penicillin, I'll call you."
"Oh, my God."
"It's okay, I'm not sick!"
The Crazies.
Now, you would think, with a title like The Crazies, that this movie dealt with cult members, terrorists, or maybe Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid.
Ha ha.
But not exactly. The Crazies is a remake of a low-budget B-movie originally shot by the filmmaker best known for Night of the Living Dead. His name, George Romero. You know, he's that zombie guy. Romero has a career that stayed with this theme of the dead. Well, the living dead. His filmography is a long list of living dead zombie flicks like, get these titles, Dawn of the Dead, Land of the Dead, Day of the Dead, and, my favorite, Brain Dead Democrats. Well, the last one is a title he didn't really make and never would, because, of course, he's a Hollywood lefty. Film writers find these subtexts about racism, consumerism, and class warfare in these horror movies. And Romero is now 70 years old, and he's working on another dead film called Survival of the Dead.
No. Are you kidding?
Coming to video on demand April 30th and theaters May 28th. The original Crazies was released in 1973. It was one of those Roger Corman-style drive-in flicks, you know, and it had the whole Vietnam War kind of mentality of the still the 60s hanging over it. And the original film dealt with the idea that biological weaponry leaked into a small town's water supply and the townspeople turned into homicidal killing machines, kind of zombie-like, and the military over-responded, as is the norm for George Romero movies. Lots and lots of killing ensues. So the new version, the 2010 version of The Crazies, adds something. 21st century technology that is now available to the government, which allows locating, monitoring, and killing using high tech. Just like the original, something has poisoned the people of a typical American town and turned them into these homicidal, zombie-like maniacs. And there is, of course, a quarantine imposed with the streets filled with black SUVs and swarming, trigger-happy soldiers. The wrong people are being shot, so citizens are rebelling and fighting back with deadly force. Participants should, actually, make a lot of money with this movie, but the company insists that they made The Crazies because of the movie's underlying political and socially progressive theme.
Well, like what?
It's the issues of weapons security, anti-biological warfare, and the purity of the water that fits in the Participant game plan as originally created by its founder, the eBay guy, Magnate Skull. In fact, Participant has launched a campaign to coincide with the release of the movie, focusing on it being an ecological and military cautionary tale. More than 50 environmental groups will use the horror flick, The Crazies, to push the environmental envelope. And in addition, the Participant campaign will advocate the passage of a federal chemical security act. Just imagine what Congress will do with that. The film feeds into the current lack of trust in the government. But its focus is on demonization of the military, depicting a part of the armed forces that has gone bad, just like its Vietnam-era predecessor did. But part of the movie's appeal may be unintended by participant.
Why do you say that?
It explores in imagery what government is capable of when martial law is declared. A peaceful day in a typical American community turns very quickly into a police state. You know, it reminds me of that Will Smith film, Enemy of the State, that was released in 1998, where after a corrupt politician finds out that Smith's character, a lawyer, has gotten a hold of powerful evidence that could bring down this politician, the power-drunk government official secretly uses the resources of the National Security Agency to stop Will Smith's character from bringing the evidence to light. So the hero finds his assets frozen, his loved ones being watched and hunted by government agents while he is on the run ducking sophisticated surveillance technology. Slogans for that movie included, "It's not paranoia if they're really after you," and this slogan, "In God we trust, the rest we monitor." The Crazies ends up being a movie that explores these themes, and it has two sets of monsters. But the government monsters end up being even more scary than the infected zombies. Thanks, Michael, for all you do in fighting those monsters. Back to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for the report, James.
Savage.
This is our review of the Savage Week. On Monday, we heard a speech by the great Michelle Bachmann, Congresswoman. I'm telling you, she gave the best speech at CPAC. If there are any children in your house, bring them to the radio and listen to a real American patriot. Listen closely.
In 1943, 67 years ago, just last week, 902 American young GI boys crossed the Atlantic Ocean on a World War II transport ship. They were one of three ships in a convoy. They were 100 miles west off of Greenland. It was 1 o'clock in the morning when a periscope came up out of the waters. It belonged to a Nazi German submarine. The periscope took aim, and it fired at the flank in the icy waters off the coast of Greenland. It hit the starboard side of the ship. Instantly, the explosion occurred. Young GIs, many of them, were killed in a matter of seconds below deck. The power was knocked out. The radio was knocked out. As you can imagine, panic, chaos set in with these boys. Men jumped the ship into the few lifeboats that there were, some of them in life jackets. But on deck, there stood four chaplains. One was a Catholic priest, another a Jewish rabbi, two were Protestant. They were calm. They were courageous. They called to the young boys. Many were pleading. They were crying. They were praying. But the chaplains preached courage. Courage, men. Courage. They opened a storage locker. They took out the remaining life jackets that they could find, and they handed them out, praying, saying courage, holding the hands of these young men, saying, put them on. They handed out the life jackets until there were more men than jackets. And wordlessly, the four chaplains removed their jackets and put them on the fearful, shaking bodies of the young GIs.
Wait, there's more.
Later, witnesses recorded that the four chaplains took their arms and gathered around one another, and they held on to each other. It took less than 20 minutes from the time the torpedo hit the ship until the ship slid into the icy water. They held on to each other, and they cried out to the young men, "Courage, boys! Hold on!" They prayed for the boys. They prayed for the survivors. And they prayed for those who were lost. And they prayed until the chaplains were no more. And of the 902 brave American GIs on board that night, 672 died. In one of the greatest acts of valor, the four chaplains demonstrated clearly what the Holy Scripture says to us. Greater man hath no love than this, but that he lay down his life for his friend. It is of this suffering and of this self-sacrifice that our nation was built upon. It was this that granted us our liberty. It was this that granted us our self-government. They chose greatness for us rather than decline. That is our history. That is the American story.
Can you believe this? We also now will play a clip of Congresswoman Bachman reading from the Declaration of Independence.
We hold these truths self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That's our mission statement. That's the American mission statement. It's our creed. It's the essence of who we are as a people. We are creatures made by God. God gave us rights. These are rights that government can never give to us. And the beauty of that is that these are rights that government can never take away from us.
Incredible that we have a patriot in the House. And by the way, she's targeted by Nancy Pelosi. Tuesday, we heard from Henry Nostrelman and his Toyota problem.
Chairman Stupak, I want to thank you for holding today's hearing on reports of sudden unintended acceleration in Toyota vehicles. I'm a great admirer of Toyota. Toyota makes good cars. I've driven one pleasurably and safely for years, and the company has been a strong corporate citizen.
What?
Toyota vehicles.
Here is the socialist Bernie Sanders of Vermont comparing those who will debate climate change to those who deny the Holocaust.
The reason that this debate is so important is that it reminds me in some ways of the debate taking place in this country and around the world in the late 1930s. And during that period, with Nazism and fascism growing, a real danger to the United States and democratic countries all over the world, there were people in this Congress, in the British Parliament, saying, don't worry, Hitler is not real. Global warming is real. If we do not get our act together, there will be devastating impacts for our kids and our grandchildren, causing, among other things, trillions of dollars in order to repair that damage, if it is repairable at all. And the longer we delay, the longer we have this senseless debate, the less prepared we will be.
Shame on you, Bernie. You owe an apology to every Jew in the United States and the world. You should step down. I'd like to know where the protests are and demands that this thing, Bernie Sanders, step down from office. Here's Obama saying he's not pushing a socialist agenda.
We've arrived at a juncture in our politics where reasonable efforts to update our regulations or make basic investments in our future are too often greeted with cries of government takeover or even socialism. And not only does that kind of rhetoric deny our history, but it prevents us from asking hard questions about the right balance between the private and public sectors. Contrary to the claims of some of my critics and some of the editorial pages, I am an ardent believer in the free market.
That's it for our Savage Review of the Week.
I was born in a welfare state, ruled by bureaucracy, controlled by civil servants and people dressed in gray. Got no privacy, got no liberty, 'cause the 20th century people took it all away from me.
had a discussion with a friend of mine who just came out of a stent, the second one he had in a few months. A very nice man, a good friend of mine. I felt bad for him. So we were talking, and he said, you know, Michael, he said, what kept me going were a number of things. He said, but one of the things you said in my pain from all of this and my fears, he said, is that no matter how bad things are, he said, I remember what you said once on the show. It's nothing compared to what our ancestors lived through. What we feel in this country today, what we think is bad, is nothing compared to what people have and are experiencing on planet Earth today. So let's all draw a deep breath and realize how lucky we are to be alive in America today.
Savage.
The Senate recently passed yet another jobs bill that will supposedly jumpstart the unemployment crisis that we're trapped in. Joining us to take a look at this latest government bureaucracy is James Shirk.
Thanks for having me on again, Michael. So the Senate passed another one of their jobs bills. It seems that everything they're passing these days is going to be labeled a jobs bill. Unemployment's high, people are concerned about the economy. So everything's going to create jobs, whether or not it is. The good news about this jobs bill is it is not nearly as expensive as the first version. The House-passed bill was a $150 billion bill. This is a $15 billion bill. So it's not as expensive. We're making progress. The bad news is that this is a jobs bill that won't create many jobs or won't do much of anything to fix the unemployment problem. But at least it's not going to half bankrupt us in the process. There's two main provisions in the bill. The first provision is it's more spending on highways. The Democrats love to do this, more construction spending, more infrastructure spending. We just got to get the government out there, and government spending will create jobs. Problem with that, of course, is, well, where's the government getting this money to spend? Well, it's borrowing it from the private sector, which means there's less money left in the private sector to spend and invest, and the money you're taking out of the private sector is now unavailable. And in fact, one of the reasons unemployment is so high is because job creation has dropped, private sector investment is down, and in part that's due to the downturn, but in part it's because of Washington borrowing so much, that they're taking the resources that entrepreneurs and businesses could have invested in and spending it on these government projects. And so this all this spending, this government spending on highways is not going to create jobs. Now, the second part of the jobs bill looks an awful lot more promising at first glance. It's the hiring tax credit.
Well, what does that do?
What this does is it suspends the payroll tax that employers have to pay on their employees' earnings. So let's say you work for a company. Let's say you make $50,000 a year, to pick a number out of the hat. Well, your employer has to pay a 6.2% payroll tax just for hiring you. So that's $3,100 a year that the employer has to pay to the government. You never see that on your pay stub. You pay your own payroll tax that's also 6.2%. But you see that $3,100 that your employer is paying for you. He just sends it directly to the government. It's a cost to him of having you on the payrolls. So what the hiring tax credit does is says, all right, for any newly hired workers, you hire a worker who had been unemployed before and hire him and you keep him on the payrolls and you don't have to pay that payroll tax. So in essence, it's a tax break for the employers for new hiring. And it also says that if you keep the workers on your payroll for at least a year, well, then you get a $1,000 tax credit the next year. Now, this sounds good, and it's certainly better than the highway spending. But the problem is, consider why an employer hires a new worker. What he does is employers hire, businesses hire, when the revenues that a worker brings in through his work, through his labor, through the goods and the services he's producing, are worth more than what it costs the employer to hire him, worth more than what he has to pay him. So on the margin, there'll be some employers who'll say, all right, you know what, it wasn't worth it for me to hire you and pay you $50,000 a year and then pay another $3,000 in taxes, but now that it's only $50,000 instead of $53,000, I'll hire you. That's worth it. Because you would have brought in $51,000 or $52,000 in profits. Now it's worth my while, and before it wouldn't have been. Some employers will react that way. But it won't be very many. Because you're not giving the employee an opportunity to create a better project. So there's not a better investment opportunity or a better business opportunity. you're not going to have terribly many employers bringing on employees full-time, making this permanent commitment to get a one-and-a-half-year tax break out of it to save a few thousand dollars on the payroll tax. There's simply not going to be that many businesses that are right on the edge of hiring or not and then decide, all right, because of this tax credit, we're going to go for it. There'll be a few, but there won't be too terribly many. There's all sorts of things that we can do that create a better business environment, that encourage businesses to hire, that will be far more effective than this Senate jobs bill. And this is only the latest Senate jobs bill. There's going to be another Senate jobs bill that they're already talking about that's going to be a bailout to state governments. And then another one after that we're hearing rumors of that's going to be more mass construction spending and basically every liberal special interest provision that you can imagine thrown in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be these so-called jobs bills after jobs bills after jobs bills. And the thing you need to understand is that these bills are not going to create jobs. These bills are called jobs bills because that's what's popular, because the politicians want to sound like they're doing something about unemployment. It's not because the substance of the bills has anything to do with reducing unemployment. For the most part, either they're not going to do it, or they're extremely ineffective measures that we really shouldn't expect to have too much of an effect on the unemployment rate.
Thanks for the report, James.
Thanks for having me back again, Michael.
Now, the media today is just as worthless. They will not say a darn thing about Muslim terrorism or illegal immigration. But somehow, they managed to get very, very, very outraged, righteously indignant, about a whale killing a trainer at SeaWorld. Listen to the outrage.
Do you know, is that a rule? Don't put your hair in the water, don't put your face near his, or has that changed since he was here?
I'm not going I'm not here today to speculate or share with you kind of the rules that we have. We're here today to talk about the event, to talk about Dawn, to express our sympathies about her, and to talk about how we're kind of addressing and looking at our procedures and policies moving forward.
Sir, how can you say you're not here to talk about the rules? You're here to explain and have SeaWorld sort of have their own come to Jesus, if you will, to explain what happened. You're telling her right now you're not here to explain the rules. How would you explain to the world who's watching you live what she's talking about?
Did you hear that last jerk? That's Orlando Salinas from Fox News. I guess he'd rather get worked up about killer whales than killer illegal immigrants. And he goes on.
I understand that this beast, and it's a beautiful beast, can jump 15 or 20 feet out of that water. And if you have people around that perimeter, who's to say that that won't happen as well?
What we started this discussion here today is to share what we've learned of this event, to share what we're doing moving forward.
What a moron, but he's not alone. The disgraced friend of Obama, Van Jones, is back defending his old socialist boss.
The one thing I will not listen to anybody say is anything negative about this president and his courage and his commitment. This man stood up and volunteered to be the captain of the Titanic after it hit the iceberg. Okay? I mean, and we're still floating.
Yeah.
And we're still floating. That's a miracle. I have no regrets going. I have no regrets leaving. Mm-hmm. I had a job before I went to the White House. Mm-hmm. I have a job after I go to the White House.
A few of them.
So I have plenty of ways to help my country, and I'm going to continue to help my country.
And here's good old Charlie Rangel, whose ethics problems have finally caught up with him to the extent that Democrats are calling for his ouster. It won't happen. You know that in Animal Farm, some animals are more equal than others.
They say here there's no evidence that I knew, nor would they be, they don't think they could find any additional evidence to alter the conclusion that I didn't know. And they move on with the admonishment. I don't want to be critical of the committee, but common sense dictates that members of Congress should not be held responsible for what could be the wrongdoing or mistakes or errors of staff, unless there's reason to believe that the member knew or should have known. And there's nothing in the record to indicate the latter.
So let's go to the callers now around America. Thanks for listening. Joe in Sacramento, what is on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Mike, I'm offended by Rock and Roll Friday. I listen to your show quite a bit, but my father... I got a father who's black, and he grew up in the 50s and during that time. And you talk, and when this Rock and Roll Friday, back during those days, blacks couldn't vote, women couldn't vote, people didn't have the rights that they do now.
Oh, so we have to erase the entire decade in order to please you?
Well, you know what you're doing, Mike. When you
I think what we should do is carry it a step further. I think anything from the 50s should be eliminated in America. Maybe we should burn all the cars of the 50s.
Oh, Mike, but you're very smart.
Maybe any television reruns in the 50s should be purged to make you feel better. Should we eliminate any reference to President Eisenhower because it offends you?
No, not at all. But you know what you're doing.
Is there something wrong with you? Is there something mentally wrong with you that you would actually waste our time with such a call? You're listening to cheerful songs from the 50s, and that offends you on a racial basis?
Because you know what you're doing when you say that when the cars are the thick and the women are straight. What's wrong with gay women?
Well, now you're changing. I thought you said your father was black.
No, but you say when the women were straight.
Wait, hold on. You just said that your father is black. Is that right?
Yes, yeah.
So what does that have to do with Rock and Roll Friday that your father was black?
Because you say the 50s. Because you love the 50s. But you don't say.
Yeah, I did love the 50s. What's the matter? I'm not allowed to love the 50s? That's a crime against you? Play any rock and roll for me.
No, but you know what you're doing, Mike.
Yeah, of course I know what I'm doing. That's why I'm here and you're there talking to yourself in a county lockup.
Hello, Mary Lou. Goodbye, heart. Sweet Mary Lou, I'm so in love with you. I knew.
With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.